Hello, this is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I am here with non-birding Bill.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir? Why are you getting all fancy on me now?
It's evening. What am I, a farmer?
Actually, shouldn't you be saying it more? Bonsoir.
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 I'm not going to say it like that.
No, don't say it. Bonsoir. You sound kind of, you know, East Coast.
East Coast of France? I got no problem with that.
You sound a little too continental for me, my friend.
I'm very
continental. If you know what I mean.
I live on the continent of North America. Thank you very much.
So, I have just gotten back from Europe, actually.
And boy, are your arms tired.
And nobody said bonsoir.
I should hope not. They should say bonsoir.
No, they shouldn't say it that way. But anyway, I was not in a place where you would say that.
You weren't in the French part of Scotland? Bonsoir!
No, it's bonsoir!
Exactly.
Did it sound like I was wearing a kilt
that? No, it sounded like you were raking up leaves outside of Springfield Elementary.
I was in Portugal, and I was in Amsterdam.
All right.
And Portugal's very laid back. Nobody does anything quickly, fast. It's not a hurry-up attitude, or if there's a problem, it's like, yeah, we're going to work this out. You're still going to pay a lot of money. We're going to work this out. But no, Portugal was... That was my shoe. Portugal was a lot of fun. The birding was very European.
Had their pinkies up as they were holding their binoculars?
No, well, I was there for work, but work was very kind to schedule some birding excursions for us.
Right.
And the digiscoping opportunities were few and far between because the birds were just miles away. Like, I saw, like, we went to a spot and I got my lifer Great Bustard, Little Bustard, and Stone Curlew, like, miles away. And I mean, I got to see Bustards. I got to see, you know.
You said that already.
I know, but I got to see bustards fly.
All
and
right.
You don't know what a bustard is. A bustard, it's kind of like an ostrich-shaped bird.
Right.
But it's like half the size. So seeing one fly, you're like, how the heck do you fly? So it's this big kind of comical bird kind of running around and actually flying and gliding and stuff.
Okay.
But they were so far away. And I was looking at some of my digiscoped images as I was putting together a blog entry about Portugal. I'm like, oh, you're really far away. You're just this.
Now, you attributed this to hunting.
My guess is that these birds are just shot at all the time.
Right.
You know, different cultures and whatnot.
But you had flamingos that were close by.
We did, but even they didn't let us get that close.
Okay.
I mean, I got closer to the flamingos than I did the bustards.
Okay.
But, and the flamingos were also closer to major cities.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw the bustards, we were way out in southeastern Portugal. We were near the Spanish border, the border with Spain, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Lisbon, you know, you're closer to the city, so they're kind of used to people. But man, as soon as they saw the scope on them, they're like, see ya, I'm out of here.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, the weird thing about flamingos was I kept hearing all these geese. And I'm like, what is that? And it's like, oh, that's the flamingos making that noise. You sound like geese. How funny.
Cool.
But, they were, instead of having great egrets all over this place, they were flamingos. But I pulled a rookie mistake. I pulled something I have not pulled since the first American Birding Association convention I went to in Tucson.
You pulled a boner, dare I say?
I don't know if I've never been clear on what that meant. I've been confused about boner ever since.
It means you made a mistake. Did you have a colossal boner?
Ever since growing pains.
Was everyone talking about Sharon's boner? Little joke for our friend Alice Bradley.
Like she listens to this podcast.
She might start.
I'm always surprised. I had an interview with a reporter today who listened to this podcast and told me how funny you are.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, no, what happened was we'd had a long day of meetings. We did a little bit of birding. Nobody eats before 8 p.m. in Portugal, so you're eating dinner late, you know,
right.
And you're having amazing fish. And also the great part is, yeah, they're having us wine. And so after dinner, people are having their coffees and port and whatnot, and it gets to me, and it's like, yeah, just like a glass of Jameson on the rocks. This happened so many times. They would just bring me the bottle of Jameson and a glass, and then I had to determine how much of it I wanted. I was like,
must have been hard for you.
Do I get to polish off this bottle? Because I could. But then I heard a rumor we were going back to that restaurant. I thought, oh, I should probably go easy so I have something to drink when I come back. But she basically, they would just charge you for the glass. And then you were in charge of your own pour.
Oh, so it's like at some Italian restaurants here, where you can have, like, they have the house wine on the table.
Yeah, only this is, do you have any Jameson?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can I have a glass with some ice? Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they come back, and they just bring the bottle and some ice, and then you never see them again. And then it's like, oh, great.
For you.
But, so anyway, you know, you have that. And then we go back to our hotel room, and the people for the meeting, because we had this lovely outdoor bar out behind our little bed and breakfast in Portugal, which also, it cracked me up. It's like, oh, yeah, this is a 16th century house. You know, this is some baron owned this, so I'm, you know, I'm staying in some baron's house that is now a bed and breakfast. But we're drinking, and like one of the guys is like, oh man, is it 1 o'clock? I gotta go to bed. I'm gonna go to bed. Sharon, you gonna go to bed? No, I'm gonna stay up. I'm in a good place. We're talking, and we'll just have one more drink. Next thing you know, it's like, oh, hey, I'm gonna try and leave names out of this. Mm-hmm. Hey, person who keeps buying us drinks, I think the bar staff wants us to leave. No, no, no. It's okay. We can stay up. It's all laid back in Portugal. And yeah, we're outside. The tab has essentially been paid, but all the chairs are on the table. What the person who's been buying us drinks can't see because their back is to the bar is that the entire staff of the bar and restaurant is clustered at the bar staring us down.
And you didn't think to mention this to that person
at all.
I did,
and I was like, I think they want us. No, no, no. It's okay. It's different over here in Europe. It's okay. So they ultimately it this is where the boner comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to my room,
right,
and I realize it's after 3 a.m. Our field trip is leaving at 6 a.m. I'm just like,
hilarious.
I'm gonna regret this. And sure enough, I wake up and I hear knocking at my door, and I realize my alarm's going off, and I'm like, oh crap, my alarm's going off, I must be waking everybody up. So I do that, and I go to the bathroom, and then I hear a knock on my door. Hey Sharon, how do you like your coffee? Do you want cream or sugar? And I was like, oh yeah, that'd be great. And so they come back a minute later, and they have the coffee, and I said, we're still leaving at 6 a.m. right? Yeah, it's after 6 a.m. Oh crap. Yeah. So, yeah. So, I can't do that anymore. I could do that back when the ABA had its last convention in Tucson, Arizona. I could go to bed at 2 a.m. and get up for that 4:45 a.m. field trip. I can't do that now. I'm like Danny Glover in, what is that, the Lethal Weapon movies? Right. I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I cannot do this anymore.
All right.
But, I mean, it was still a lot of fun. I would go back there. And then Amsterdam, of course, was a lot of fun because I went to go see my nephew. We started filming stuff for the next web series. I don't know when the Amsterdam stuff is going to make it in, but it should be great.
Okay. What news do you have for us?
I have so much news. You're going to love this.
Okay.
So this actually just came in today. The American Birding Association had their Birder's Guide that is all about taxonomy come out.
Okay.
And
sure, this will be great.
You're going to love this because the ABA Record Standards and Ethics Committee has made some supplemental changes.
All right.
So some of it makes sense.
I'm sure they will affect me greatly.
Maybe in your funny bone. Okay, some of this makes sense because, you know, they talked about, you know, the use of audiovisual devices and how to use a remote device and can you count that bird?
Okay.
So, it's basically to address when a bird may or not count if it's detected by a remote device. We hope that the language is pretty self-explanatory as to when the recorder may count a bird detected with remote devices. A microphone counts as a sound augmenting device.
Okay, so does the person have to... Is this saying that if you record a sound and play it back later, it counts? Or is this saying if you leave a voice-activated...
I think this is kind of getting into the whole drone territory. So, like, if you're out there and you're hearing the bird and you're recording it, you have to go back and kind of, like, ID it.
Okay.
That counts. But, you know, if you're, like, taking a drone out in the middle of nowhere and you're not actually looking at the bird and the bird is looking at, and the drone is looking at it.
Okay.
This is also, people are going to be really excited about this. and this was a unanimous vote from the committee, by the way, is that once an exotic species is accepted onto the ABA official list, if it is recorded during its time on the checklist, it should always count on that birder's list, even if that exotic species becomes extirpated or is removed for other reasons at some future point.
Wait, what?
Okay. So let's say here in Minnesota, I'm trying to think what would be a good example. Okay, remember that time we saw the blue tit at Neil's house?
I do.
Okay, so let's say we ended up having a population of blue tits suddenly show up in Minnesota.
Right.
They were self-sustaining, and the ABA was like, there are so many blue tits where you guys live, you can totally count that on your list. Okay. And then let's say a feral cat colony moves in, or a tornado happens and wipes out all the blue tits.
Okay.
And there's no longer a sustaining population of blue tits. So the ABA was like, you know, we can't really say this is a sustainable species and it's no longer countable in Minnesota. It's no longer countable in the ABA checklist area, in the ABA area. Because it was acceptable at the time I saw that blue tit, I can still keep it on my list. But no one can come to Minnesota at that point. And if they see a random blue tit that's been released, they can't count it.
I want to point out that there's no prize for this list. There's no money. There's no, you don't get anything for
it. I hear
it. This is basically a bunch of people who probably don't know you deciding whether you saw a bird or not.
But here's the thing. This is kind of a game.
Yeah.
Games need rules. And sometimes rules need clarification. And for some people, that's what makes it fun. For me, this is the kind of stuff that makes me think, I never want a list. I could give a rat's ass as to what's going to happen here.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad that they made that change. That change makes sense.
Yes.
Now, did these rules that they changed, the ones we were talking about before, did they cover playing of calls?
You know, I actually didn't read that part. I got so wound up in the exotic thing because...
In the part that actually affects what you do. Yeah, okay.
Because here's another thing. Some birders spend a considerable amount of time and effort locating an ABA, quote, official, unquote, exotic species to record on their lists. The committee felt strongly that a birder should not be penalized for taking the time and effort to record the species and then have the species removed from their list when it's taken off the official ABA checklist. Although the crested mina is, you know, a prime example of that.
Of course, yes, obviously.
So, anyway... There are all sorts of little changes that have been... this is another one. The committee unanimously agreed that birds that are rehabilitated and then released may be counted upon their release. So...
Oh, good.
So this, let's say if you have gone... If you're going to one of the Raptor Center releases, they have big ones here in the Twin Cities, you've never seen a wild northern goshawk.
Right.
When they release that northern goshawk, it's not countable.
Okay, good. Yeah. I believe if you, and please nobody do this, because I think a lot of the old episodes still aren't up yet, but I think I posed this question at one point, was like, how long do you have to wait for a bird to be released to be countable?
They have clarified that, actually, because the committee unanimously agreed to delete the, quote, such as initial perching, unquote, clause, and the clause preventing the countability. Oh, wait, that's nocturnal birds being released. Oh, never mind.
Jesus Christ.
There is a clarification.
You know, I did an interview about podcasting, and they asked me how much prep work I do. I said, none. I just want to get these stories as they come to me. I assumed you did some preparation with these stories. I assumed that you had, like, some idea of what we were talking about.
I did have some idea, and when I read this, I didn't realize I was reading about... the whole thing that I was just showing about initial perching, that's rule 3.C parentheses I. We were originally on rule 2.B parentheses V. The committee did also unanimously agree in principle that to prevent a bird's access to medical care that it needs so that other birders may count the species prior to its rehabilitation is completely unethical.
Good. That's a completely sensible ruling. Good. I'm glad they made that.
I remember years ago, gosh, this is, I think, even before the blog, there was a summer tanager in wintertime that was hanging out at Theater Worth. And I went to go see it after work, and the bird is sitting, is essentially sleeping under a bench that a woman is sitting on, and kind of oblivious that she has this orange, or this, I guess it was kind of red, orange, and yellow bird underneath her. And I walked up to it, and I said, do you mind if I just reach underneath you? And she's like, no, no problem. And I reach out and grab this bird. She had no idea it was there. And I'm walking, and another bird is like, what is that? I said, this is the tanager everybody's coming to see today. And I said, it needs medical help. Am I going to get in trouble if I steal the stakeout bird and take it to the wildlife rehab center? He had his own issues with me taking it to the rehab center. Not that making it countable, but, you know, he's one of those old school birders that doesn't like...
medicine?
Doesn't like taking a wild bird and taking it to a rehab center.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
There's a whole thing with the deal of whether or not you should interfere with the bird's medical care. Anyway, if you care about the tiny minutia of listing...
And you shouldn't.
You know you should. For some people, that's what makes it fun. It's not what makes it fun for me, but... I think there's probably been some splitting and lumping. Somebody probably got some armchair birds today. I probably got an armchair bird, but I just... Anyway, if you care about the minutiae of ethics, and thank goodness there are people who are out there, you know, coming up with rules so that it's beneficial for birds and it's not just all helter-skelter out there when people are bird-watching.
If you feel that you need a committee to tell you what your ethics are, check out this list.
If you're looking at a bird and it looks injured and you're thinking, ooh, I'm going to leave this out here for 10 more minutes so that way five other people can see it, maybe take a step back.
All right. Okay, what else we got?
Oh, since we're talking about the American Birding Association.
All right.
Their hashtag on Twitter got a little spamified. So the ABA has a hashtag for reporting rare birds.
Sure.
And the hashtag is ABA Rare.
Okay.
Some spam bots,
I guess, sure.
Got into it and started posting links of... Mm-hmm. Attractive young women.
Sure. Sunglasses, things like that. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. Offering various services unrelated to birding.
Yeah, you don't need to describe it. People know what you're talking about.
This is bird watching. I don't think they do.
Yeah, this happens. This usually happens with popular hashtags, but I imagine it would happen with the ABA as well.
That's a sign that the ABA has gotten really popular. You know, it's popular enough for a spam bot to get in on there.
Exactly.
So, but it started off with someone saying, hey, ABA, you got some interesting postings under your hashtag. And they're like, there's nothing we can do.
Nothing you can do about it.
And then someone said, well, you know, you can report the people as spam.
Yeah, I'm sure Twitter will get right on that.
Well, you can block. Well, I mean, and you yourself, you can block those so that way you don't see them in the hashtag.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, there are things that you can do to not. It seems like more effort than But if you have a hashtag that goes on long enough, eventually, yes, spammers discover that. So.
Yeah.
So
if you have a Facebook page that remains inactive, you can.
Oh yeah, tons.
As was discovered with the fake Davidson.
Oh no! Yeah, there's one of the Facebook groups I'm a part of will periodically get. Spam bots selling sunglasses. Is for some reason it's always sunglasses. I have no idea why. This is not an outdoor group.
Is it because maybe this is a page that has sponsorship from Warby Parker?
Probably not really. My actual feeling about it is that when these spam bots appear, the people will like jump on and start talking to it as if it's a real person, like because they always have that broken English. One of them was like. So far, great, my brother. And it was like, oh, tell me about your brother and his great sunglasses. And then we'll just like start talking about it. And then eventually the person who hosts the page deletes it. And we talk about, oh, he died. It's so sad. He was really great. But I think it's because who's ever sending these spam bots here? Because they see all the response that they're getting that they keep sending them to the page. So...
Yeah. So anyway, if you are on Twitter and you follow the hashtag...
If you want some discount sunglasses, go to ABA Rare...
No, this
is .gov.
Let me tell you, it is definitely not sunglasses.
Yeah, okay.
And if it is sunglasses, sunglasses going into unusual cavities.
Yeah, they're basically the worst human beings.
So if you see this spam, if you follow the ABA Rare hashtag and you feel strongly about these porn spam bots.
Do not complain to the ABA. There is nothing they can do about it. They do not control the hashtag.
All you can do, though, is you can report that user as spam and you can block that user. So if they're, but they'll just create a new account.
Yeah.
Who pays for porn?
Oh, there are lots of people, I would imagine.
I don't understand that, because as I understand it, it's pretty freewheeling out there on the internet.
Oh, yeah, it's everywhere.
I know. I mean,
you have to work not to find it, actually.
I know, so that's why I don't understand why we need to have pornography
spam bots. I mean, we're getting into very, you know, PG-13R territory, but I told you my story about when I was in England, right? And I was trying to watch Doctor Who.
You told me, I don't know if you told the podcast.
No, I didn't tell the podcast. I was trying to find Doctor Who. So I was staying at...
was when the premiere of Doctor Who.
Yeah, this was the season premiere of Doctor Who. So I was staying in an apartment that the person very kindly lent me their apartment because we were friends of friends. And I was trying to figure out their TV, which had a very strange setup. So I'm going through and I'm trying to find BBC. And I end up in the deep end of the TV dial trying to find out, because I'm used to BBC America being like buried low. I didn't realize like BBC would be like, you know, channel 4 for them.
Considering you were in London where... Well,
no kidding. This is my first time trying to figure out. Anyway,
it's like network TV for exactly. them over there.
But anyway, so in the deep end of British TV, they have a slew of channels live of young ladies, let's say, doing aerobics.
Are they doing aerobics or are they doing quote aerobics?
Quote aerobics. But the weird thing is, it's not like, you know, here's the sexy movie that's coming up next. Here's 10 seconds. It's like, you can watch this, but they want you, the way they get paid is you call in. Okay. So this is porn for guys who don't have internet but do have a phone and a credit card number and want to call for like sex talk.
So wait, this was
porn, and they had a separate number for Irish credit cards.
Okay, I'm not even gonna unpack that a bit, but
so I was trying to do like a psychological profile of who was using this, because the other weird, this is okay, so that was weird enough, right? You agree with me?
I agree.
We need to put a warning for this one.
This one goes blue.
But the weird part was you could, pay to, cause they had like a text number that you could text to get pictures, or you could text your own pictures and pay to do that.
Wait. You had to pay money to send pictures of yourself yes. to the girl on the TV?
Yes. Right?
There's so many conversations I want to have right now, because this kind of gets back to...
Listing
gets back to the whole thing of, I get a variety of things sent to my phone.
Sure.
Most of the time, these days, most of the pictures I get sent are turkeys. Wild turkeys.
Please tell me that's not a metaphor.
No, but every now and then I get sent something that's not a turkey.
Sure.
But...
A turkey neck?
Share some similarities with the turkey. And it's like, why are you sending me this? We barely know each other. Don't you know that I will probably just go into Photoshop and put it into all sorts of cartoony things and then share that with me? I just don't understand the need.
So anyway. But no, that was the weird part for me, was like these whoever is, and there were like a ton of these channels. I mean, it was a lot of channels.
And these aren't BBC endorsed channels.
No. These are just like, you know, independent operators. But apparently there's a huge enough market for
people who
men.
Want to send their photos.
Men who want to talk on the phone with women and like don't have a computer but have a phone and a credit card.
Yeah.
Wow. So this has nothing to do with birds, so we should probably move on.
This got into... I blame the American Birding Association for this, because their hashtag got hijacked by...
It's all their fault.
It's fast. Yeah, it's... Well, and it's just... Well, it's also fascinating with the whole thing of, like, all the actresses who got their phones hacked, and then their photos are out there.
Oh, they're not. Anyway.
Anyway, people take naked photos.
We're going very far afield with... Let's get back to bird news. Let's move on to the next story.
All right, so our next story, we talked about the O. Well, hey, since we're in the world
we talked about the O. Do you O?
O. 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 So, actually, since we're talking about racy lives, let's talk about whooping cranes and the days of their lives.
All right.
So, apparently, somebody was taking some pictures of some whooping cranes down in Indiana during the migration.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole thing about, you know, cranes mating for life. Cranes very clearly have open relationships.
Oh, all right.
Because somebody was noticing this group of whooping cranes, and there was a male who was tagged at 1905. Okay. And he was in a long-term, or an LTR, as they say, the young people say, with a whooping crane with the number 804. And I should also clarify, these are whooping cranes from Nisita, Wisconsin, and from Florida, who have leg bands, so you can read these bands. So if you have a spotting scope and you see whooping cranes with the color bands on their legs, you can read the numbers. You can find out their life histories online, because people keep track of this.
Sure, everyone was on pins and needles waiting
for
that. So
yeah, over last winter, 1905 dumped 804 and hooked up with younger 1343.
Okay.
Migrated halfway up from Florida. And here is the crazy thing. The male had been a resident Florida bird. He wasn't part of the migratory flock. So just decided, hey, I'm going to fly with this young thing. And so was seen in Bloomington, Indiana. And then things didn't work out. She continued on to Wisconsin. And then he went back down to Florida with his original mate. But yeah. Things happen.
All right. Well, they're animals. I mean, it's, you know, it's amusing from a human's perspective to, like, you know, to look at this in terms of human relationships. But they're animals. They're not, you know, they're not concerned with loyalty. They're looking for, you know, whatever is genetically driving them in terms of reproduction.
Yeah, but with cranes, they're kind of like geese in the sense that it makes sense to form these long-term relationships. Sure. And these quote-unquote lifelong partnerships.
Right.
And so people, you know, I always am very careful to say bald eagles will return to a territory year after year. Mm-hmm. And if it's the same bird there that was there last year, that's great. And if that happens over 10, 15 years, that's awesome. I don't want to call that let's mate and fall in love with life. Because with things like bald eagles, right, they it seems to be more territory related than bird, like, you know, who you are related. Right. Whereas with a species like a crane, their lifestyle, it seems more beneficial that I'm going to pair up. This is going to be my partner in migration, my partner that it takes a long time to raise a chick with compared to some other species of birds. But it seems like they have a little leeway in there. Anyway, don't base your long-term relationship or marriage or whatever you want to call it on a bird. Or maybe do. I don't know. Maybe it's relaxing. I don't know. Yeah, actually, maybe do base it on a bird.
Way to take a stand. Here I plant my flag. Here and no further will I fall back.
You know what? Just base it on hummingbirds. Mate with the guy. Get your eggs fertilized. Build the nest. Chase him out of there.
Chase him out of the territory, yeah.
Or be a godwit. No, I would. If I were going to do anything, I'd be the godwit. I'd mate with you. I'd dump my eggs. I'd get the hell out of Dodge. You raise those kids.
All right.
That's me. I'm a godwit.
All right.
No. Phalarope. I'm a phalarope. I'm not a godwit. I'm a phalarope.
No, I'm a unicorn. No, I'm a griffin.
I'm a Scottish unicorn.
All right. Next story.
This is actually really exciting. I didn't plan on talking this.
Oh, boy. That's what you said about the ABA story, and that kind of cratered out.
Come on. Ruben, aren't you really excited that you can count Orange Bishop in some places now? You say continue. That now, but when climate change comes and we have budgerigars, you know, hanging out in the prairies of Minnesota, you're going to be so excited.
Yep. I will. What's the story?
Okay. So you know how some solar energy plants, of that gigantic one we've mentioned in the podcast.
Yes.
This
is the story where solar energy plants are killing birds because they're not solar panels. They are reflecting heat.
A solar energy company has dropped a proposal to build a 75-story solar tower near California's Joshua Tree National Park because of that.
Good.
So, I mean, I don't want to say that we don't want alternative energy.
Right.
We just need to find a way to deal with alternative energy so that it's not melting thousands of birds.
We need to understand the environmental impact of what we're doing. And that's, you know, that's, we're always chasing better energy and clean energy, and there are trade-offs with what we're doing, but in this case, there would be environmental trade-offs.
Yeah, really sucky ones,
yeah,
too.
So.
You know, and I've kind of been thinking about that with the whole Viking Stadium, because we're still fighting the Viking Stadium, issue here in Minnesota. So essentially, the Minnesota Vikings are building a gigantic stadium.
Mm-hmm.
They've decided to make it very see-through and use glass. And I mean, the amount of glass is like 4 football fields worth of glass. And the idea is that the community can look into the stadium and the stadium blends into the community.
But they're not going to be looking into the stadium. They're going to be looking, they're not going to be able to watch the game. They're going to be looking into the escalators that will lead you into the stadium. And
but you know those escalators are part of the community. Yeah, right, you know, right, man? Yeah. Anyway, it's aesthetics. The Vikings and the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority have all said, we have the money to do this, but it's not a money issue. It's the aesthetics.
Yeah.
And it's the glass they've chosen is the worst kind of glass, and they're less than a mile from the Mississippi River. It's just going to kill a lot of birds. And there have been architects weighing in on this issue and saying, this is going to be more lethal than most of the other buildings in downtown Minneapolis.
Right.
But the cool... if there is going to be a silver lining to this, I still think there's a chance that the Vikings could change the glass. The Vikings are getting a lot of bad publicity from a number of different sources. This would be a nice way to
It's a bad time for the NFL in general.
It's a bad time for the... yes, that is a good way to say it.
Yeah.
Is it too much to ask that people...
no, let's move on.
Okay.
Continue with the thought you had before.
All right. The silver lining that I see out of this, if the Vikings still stand firm and decide to keep the glass, that so many people are paying attention to this now. Mm. There was just an event that happened up in Duluth, Minnesota, where the thousands of non-Raptors migrated. I think even Hawk Ridge documented it from the first weekend in October, from Friday through Sunday, over 65,000 quote-unquote non-Raptor. How many times am I going to say quote-unquote in this podcast?
You say it more than you think.
In this podcast or in general?
All right.
Anyway.
So anyway.
65,000 non-migrating, or... 65,000 non-raptors that were migrating. So we're talking your yellow rumps, thrushes, woodpeckers, blue jays, that kind of nonsense. So they were migrating over the ridge. The way the weather patterns configured, it just pushed the birds onto the North Shore off of Lake Superior. And some of the birds were exhausted and feeding. And there's a highway along there, Highway 61. And I've had people tell me, it's like, yeah, I was driving up there the first weekend in Duluth. I hit like 7 birds, and I wasn't trying to. And no.
Thanks.
No, I know the phenomenon
Captain
that they're
Planet
having.
Gives you the big thumbs up for that one.
No, you're driving along, you're following the speed limit, and you have all these yellow-rumped warblers just, you know, chasing insects, and they're not paying attention to the cars, and then bang, they ricochet off your windshield. And you're going 60 miles an hour, or whatever the speed limit is there. So, but people are becoming more aware of this, and they're now starting to document this, and there are things you can do, there are...
I just don't understand why they're being such wangs about it.
Why the Vikings are being wangs?
Yeah, because, I mean, it seems like, I mean, it would...
There's no, nobody friggin' cares what the glass looks like. And it's like, is the architect somebody's son? Or, like, you know, no, they're being jerks about this for no reason.
I think this is one of the rare cases, when they just said this has to do with aesthetics, I think it's somewhere along the line where someone said, this is pretty, we like this, we want this kind of
but
look.
But that makes nobody gives a crap about okay, we are not building a stadium so that the outside of it can look pretty. They're building this new stadium so that the millionaires who play in it and the billionaires who own the team can make a lot of money. Yeah. And increasing the cost. It's not like this money is coming out of their pocket. They're bonding this stadium from the public so that it can be built.
I know.
And they're just being wangs about it for no reason, because nobody gives a frick what the outside of this stadium looks like except the architects.
And I think that's where it's coming from, is that, no, this is my vision. This is what I had. I don't want that.
Well, nuts, screw you.
That's what
I'm upset that we're building this stadium in the first place.
Well, you know.
I know Sharon is a longtime Vikings fan.
Oh my God. That's been the craziest thing to come out of this, is that I have been labeled as a longtime Vikings fan.
The best part was in the issue of Minnesota Monthly that you were in, they had another cover story, which was how to fake it as a Vikings fan.
That's a completely separate difference. I've been all over the media lately, and you're referencing two different articles. I was in Minnesota Monthly.
Yes, you were.
In my Doctor Who shirt. I I am so proud of the Minnesota Monthly art. Well, actually, I felt bad because, like, the article came out online first, and the woman who wrote it, who's very nice, and her last name is German for bird, like, let me know. And I was like, oh, that's great. And I was in the middle of 20 million things, like, moving and getting ready to go to Europe. And, oh, God, Texas was in there, too. And so I was like, okay, that's out. And then she's like, I haven't heard from you since the article came out. Is everything okay? Can you tell me about it? And I was like, I just don't like reading about myself. I don't want to read about myself. And so I actually read the article, and the thing that struck me is Minnesota Monthly kept all the profanity in there.
That's my girl.
I would just like to say, when I do park ranger programs, I do not use profanity. When I'm around kids, I don't use profanity. Except maybe that one time when I didn't know those Amish kids were standing behind me. But that didn't count, because I wasn't in Park Service uniform.
It wasn't in ancient German or Middle English.
But, you know, I generally have a switch.
Sorry, I apologize to all our Amish listeners if I've insulted you.
No, I was just thinking, I don't swear in front of kids. I have a good switch with that. But I now have a distinct memory once of I said something, and David LaPuma, who's now head of Cape May Bird Observatory, was like, hey, man, they're kids. And I looked and I was like, oh, crap, there's Amish kids behind me. But most of the time, I'm pretty good with that. But you know, when I'm around adults, I just kind of let it fly.
Rumspringa has started early for them.
But anyway, it's a nice article. It's very different from the article, though, that said that I was a longtime football fan in Wired. And I was like, wow.
All right, what else we got?
Rodent shortage.
Oh, my. You know, I was just going to the pantry to get some rodents, and I noticed I was going to write you a note. But now you tell me there's a shortage?
Well, you know, I was thinking this is a raptor rehab facility I was reading about in Connecticut. And I used to, remember years ago when I used to volunteer for the Raptor Center at the U of M?
Yes.
That's been a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Well, this is a similar organization, and when you have one of these birds of prey organizations, you can only feed them meat. And you can't just feed them, you know, chicken breasts. You have to feed them, they like, all the grossest parts of the animal are best.
Yep.
You know, that's where they get the nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these places will have contracts. Like, when we would cut up some of the rats and mice at the Raptor Center, because it was part of the University of Minnesota, they would get a lot of lab rats and mice from the campus.
Yes.
Sometimes you couldn't use them because you would open them up and there would be staples and whatnot in
there.
But anyway, there's a shortage going on for this center because they have been working with Charles River Laboratories, and it's a leader in breeding animals for biomedical research. But they are committed to the humane treatment of lab animals and reducing the number of animals needed for testing. So before, they would just produce all these rats and mice. The excess from like, oh, we have too much rats and mice for this project. We're just going to donate them to the center so the animals are going to... So this center is trying very hard to be very ethical.
Sure.
In how, so that way it's not just producing too much and...
Right. Let's be clear about this. The animals that, like, a raptor center uses are not... They don't just throw the rat in with the raptor and let the raptor...
Yes.
The animals are humanely killed. Let's be honest. They're killed.
Yeah.
And because, you know, you don't want to expose the animal to any... You don't want to expose the food rat to any chemicals that would harm the raptor. So, but these animals are... Destroyed is, I guess, the word.
And again, they try to do it as humanely as possible,
right?
Without chemicals.
Because the people who worked at raptor centers, hey, guess what? They like animals.
Yes.
And then they feed. So I understand that, you know, they don't want to produce more animals than they need, which is admirable. But at the same time, this has a fall down effect.
Well, and here's the thing. The person who runs this raptor center in Connecticut said the company told us that their demand for mice production is down because there are new technologies that are replacing the need for live mice. That's a good thing. Because I always have, I've had mixed feelings about
Animal
rats
testing,
and mice used for medical testing.
Yep.
Definitely against it for cosmetic testing.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
And I try very hard as a female who you cannot avoid wearing makeup. And using certain types of products, especially if you appear on TV. You just, there is an appearance you have to have. You cannot have that appearance without makeup. I spend way too much money on, and I don't buy a lot of stuff. I just buy basically, like, foundation and eyeliner and, what's the other stuff called? What's the stuff you put on your eyelashes? Mascara.
Blood.
But I mean, I pay way too much money for this. But I try to buy the stuff. I try to read up, and it's very difficult because some companies for a while will not do animal testing, and then all of a sudden they will. Right. And so, you know, you have to do that. And
right. Well, and, okay.
But anyway, so this is good that this mm-hmm. is down. But I still have wondered about that with medical testing. And especially, I remember there were times we were cutting up rats at the Raptor Center, and they were clearly part of some obesity study. Mm. And after a few years, like, how many times do we need to, like, make these rats obese?
Right.
So that we know that being obese is bad for you. Mm. But it does have kind of this lasting effect because we now have more zoos and raptor facilities, which do a lot of good educational work. But it's expensive to keep those birds. And if you're in, so the facility is talking about. So if you have a raptor and it consumes on average 4 mice a day,
mm-hmm.
and the average price for a professionally bred mouse, euthanized, clean and free of poison, is 70 to 75 cents. That doesn't even include, and that's per body.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't even include the shipping costs.
Right.
And so they're looking at where they can cut corners, and so they're looking at using day-old chickens, which are 19 cents each, and then beef hearts. So it's this interesting thing where raptor centers are going to start needing more money.
I agree. I think this is actually an important story because this gets into the part of wildlife care that people don't think about, because if you go to a zoo or if you go to a raptor center or if you go to an adoption center, it's not just cute animals sitting in there saying, you know, clocking in and out. These animals, there is a lot of care that needs to go into this. The animals need to be fed, they need to be cleaned, they need to be treated by doctors, and this takes money.
It takes money. And especially, I mean, just this general basic food need.
And you see, and I mean, when you see them, they're in kennels, they're in cages, they have, you know, it doesn't look expensive, but the day-to-day care of, as anybody who owns a pet will know, it adds up quickly. So think about this and donate to your center. And I'm glad that, you know, this research center is, you know, trying to be ethical and trying to say, oh, we're producing more rats than we need, but...
Yeah, we used to have 2 pounds of extra mice at the end of the month that we would just donate to you. We don't have that anymore. Yeah. You're going to have to find your own way with that. Yeah. So, I mean, it's... On the one hand, it's really exciting. And it's exciting to read that, oh, hey, medical testing is changing, that we don't necessarily need live mice anymore to do that with. But, it's a cause for concern for these raptor centers that have education birds
if you have some place near you, I mean, check out their needs, because not all their needs are financial. Sometimes they need blankets or, you know, whatever. They have like a wish list that you can use, so check that out. But definitely, you know,
and good. Please, whatever you do, do not raise your own animals and take them into the center, because what happens is that the center says, well, thank you, we don't take pets, and our birds don't eat guinea pigs, and then suckers like you and I end up living with a guinea pig for 4 years.
Completely different story. All right, do we have any other stories?
That was my last story.
All right, Lee, it's time for you to do the wrap-up. This is podcast 178.
Wait. I'm doing the wrap-up?
You're doing the wrap-up, because every time I do the wrap-up, you interrupt me.
What am I supposed to say in the wrap-up?
You tell people what podcast number this is and how to contact you. Where to find more information about these stories.
Okay.
Because every time I do this, you interrupt me.
Okay. So, this is Bird Chick podcast number 178.
Good.
Whatever links I remember to put in about the podcast are going to be there. Any other information that you have from this podcast, I would highly recommend that you go into Google or whatever search engine you prefer.
Go to birdchick.com, look for podcast 178.
I just said 178, you're repeating
But me. You didn't say go to birdchick.com and look for the podcast link.
Well, that's because I wasn't prepared to talk about this. The links will be
there, unless she forgets again and I have to do it.
I was really busy because we were moving. I had just come back from Texas.
Oh, you were really busy because we were moving?
And then I had to go to Portugal for work.
And how can people contact you if they have further questions?
You can email me at Sharon@birdchick.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me on Facebook under Bird Chick, and if you're remotely curious, that's facebook.com/thebirdchick.
Okay.
And you can ask me questions there. You can send story ideas there. Sure. I'm on Twitter as @birdchick. You know, pretty much any social media platform that's worthwhile that I'm interested in, mm-hmm. if it's birdchick, it's me.
Friendster.
Nobody's on Friendster, except maybe people in Malaysia. That's just another country that, no, there are all sorts of social media platforms out there.
You go to altavista.com.
I'm on Elo. See, I don't know what the heck to do.
When you're trying to wrap it up and somebody interrupts
you. I don't mind this. I'm cool with this. Yeah. I'm having a great time.
see what you
Give me
feel
your
about
drink.
It after a 700.
But no, podcast. I'm on Elo. I don't know what to do with Elo, but I think Elo's going to be Google Plus.
Yeah.
I was talking, my nephew is like, he's big in the Netherlands.
You're interrupting yourself now as you're trying to do the wrap-up.
I know,
which
but
is
I was, let me have a drink of your drink. All right. So, my nephew, he's a big deal in the Netherlands, internet-wise.
.nl, everybody knows Brian.
That's not his real name. In the Netherlands, he goes by a different name.
Captain Cool.
Yes, Captain Cool. But no, I like having conversations with him because because he kind of gives me the insights about, you know, where the networks are. He's kind of like you in that sense. Uh-huh. But he was talking about what he thinks is the next big thing, and what he's teaching kids to do is like how to curate your social media.
Oh,
I know
God.
You hate that word.
Stop using that.
Okay, word. How to edit your social media.
Perfect.
Okay, so everyone else is going to say curate, but for you, I'll say edit. So you have these things, and you have all these people friending you, and you have all these Twitter accounts and blah, blah, blah. You manage it so you see the stuff you want to see.
Good.
And you figure out which parts of your life are going to be public and which parts of your life are going to be private. And I think you and I have intuitively done a good job of that. Right. I mean, I'm very distinct in what I'm pretty much what you see is what you get with me. But I understand that not everybody wants what I have. So I'm very strict, I shouldn't say strict, I'm very careful about what I put on social media, and sure. There's, I would say about 75% of my life I'm really okay with being out there, and 25% of it, nobody wants to see that. Sure. Nobody. I'm surprised
I certainly don't.
Well, you know, that was the for better or for worse part that you signed up for.
Learn from my flaws, people.
But no, it was just interesting having that conversation with my nephew about...
Yeah.
Social media and how he's teaching kids how to curate. And so when people ask me, where are the young birders? You know, how can we find them? It's like, they're out there and they're just interacting in a way that they don't want to interact with us. And they don't want to interact with me I'm now in the official old person.
There was, line. I think you were out of town when somebody posted this. I found it highly amusing, being a man who's over 40. Someone posted on the Toast, if you are a woman under 28... and you hear a man over 40 say this to you, run until you escape the Earth's gravitational pull. And it's things like, I see a lot of potential in you.
Oh, God.
And you remind me of my wife. Like, there's all these horrible things. It's like, I don't believe I've ever said that to a woman under 28, but yeah.
You would have said it to me if you had an opportunity to say it to anyone. Actually, I'm currently reading the Lena Dunham biography.
Sure.
Judge, or I'm sorry, it's an autobiography.
Right.
Judge whatever you will.
I do. Yeah.
I like Lena Dunham. She's a good writer. I appreciate her honesty and stuff being out there. But she has a whole thing about she was dating someone who is a very popular television personality in the 90s. But by the time she's dating him, he's not popular anymore. Sure. He's waiting. And he keeps talking about their age difference. And I think at the time he's like 34. But he keeps saying over again, every time he brings up his age, he's like, I'm the same age as Jesus. And I was like, yeah, that's another.
What was the great thing? I follow Mara Wilson, who, and she acknowledged, you know. She played Matilda in the films, but she's a writer now. She's very funny, and her tweets are fantastic. But she had this really great tweet. She says, what was it? Anytime any man over 40 flirts with me, I say, I remind you of somebody you went to college with.
That's true. As someone who dated a lot of... Well, in college, I had this goal with myself before I met you.
Yeah.
Who was the oldest person I could be with? You're still younger than that person. I'll give you that.
Well, we have really gone overboard. Okay.
See, I love me doing the closing. This is great. I can interrupt myself to my heart's content, and you can interrupt me, and I don't get all bitter about it like you used to.
All right. All right. We will talk to you later, folks. Bye-bye.